So one of the things Anthony did just mention there in one of his answers was about the impacts of fly-in, fly-out workforces. And our next speaker, Lindsay Greer, who's from the Centre of Environmental Management at the Central Queensland University, has a fairly innocuous title for his speech today, which is The Changing Face of Rural Workforces and Communities. But he can get controversial because some of the work that he has been doing is exactly this on fly-in, fly-out workforces. So I'll introduce Lindsay and he can talk about some of his research.
Thank you very much. I try not to be too controversial. Okay. The research I'm going to talk about is a research I've been conducting over the last 2 to 3 years. It comes from a number of different sources, but this is one of the major funding sources. And just following on from Simon Crean's presentation, Central Queensland University ended up getting a very small amount of the money in this particular program. And with that, those research funds were able to leverage other research. So we were following on from his direction there. Program itself is split up into three different programs. So I've been working in the regions in transition. Program 3, down the bottom there, understanding regional sensitivities associated with exploration and resources. And over the last 3 years, it's been a very active area to work in. There's been a lot of things happening and a lot of quite exciting controversies. So by getting into this particular area, what I've been looking at is all these sort of competing narratives around the discussions of what's been occurring, mainly in the sort of Bowen Basin and the Surat Basin regions. And I particularly like this image for a number of different reasons. Every time I look at it, I get this different sort of story to come out of it. But when I first saw it, I just thought, well, it's very masculine. It's also, when I was considering how other researchers have considered regional Australia and how they see people living within the regions and their capacities, etc., they see people in the regions as these gritty little characters, but they're naked. They need assistance, etc. And also that the regions have these big things. They have these big issues. They have these big dollars. They have this big activity occurring there. So I do find it quite useful to think about this particular image as I'm going through the presentation. So the presentation themes, I'm going from that very broad title, and I very quickly narrow down to the small amounts of research that I've been doing. So the main themes are around mobile workforces in general, and then I'll sort of drill down to look at the dimensions of mobile workforce, reasons for increased mobility within the workforce, and very quickly get on to fly-in, fly-outs, etc., and look at a question around mobility and social capital, and this question around relocation. So it's not so much about people staying within the communities, because in the Bowen Basin, a lot of those particular communities, it's more a question of people being pushed out, I suppose, by increased housing costs, etc., than people just choosing to stay if they lose their job. It becomes quite difficult. Okay, so our approach to mobile workforce is that it's not inherently problematic. A lot of the research that we've looked at takes a particular site and continues that particular argument. We tried to look at this and say, hey, it's not inherently problematic. It has advantages, disadvantages for all different players. So let's try and understand why it's happening, why it seems to be increasing, and try and get the dimensions around it. Now, as a sort of policy issue, it's an extremely complex issue to get involved with, that it cuts across a number of the different spheres. So it becomes a domestic issue, it becomes an industrial relations issue. There's all these different areas there. It's also a difficult social terrain in as much as the expectations keep shifting. So it's very hard to say, you know, 5 years ago this was the accepted norm, but things keep changing, and within the regions normalisation keeps shifting. So what do we mean by mobility? In simple terms, looking at the history of people relocating, mainly from mining, which is my main area, we saw a lot of people relocating during the gold rushes, etc., etc., relocating to get a better life, to get this better sort of opportunity. So there's migration, which is that long-term permanent relocation. There's commuting on a short-term basis, long-distance commuting, intermittent casual workers, especially within the mining services sector. And there's all these different variations of FIFO, DIDO, FIDO, and reverse FIFO, which is a really quite an interesting area, which I'll get into. And just down the bottom there, I've just got some of the key issues that came up in most of the research that we looked at in this area. In the broader context of work commutes, there's an estimated 8 million work commutes in Australia. 95.4% of those are less than 50 kilometres. So lots of people are commuting, but very small proportion of those commutes are longer distance ones, over 100 kilometres. This is a growing area. It's expected to increase, but it's still only a small percentage of all those people who are commuting. Most of the long-distance commuters reside in capital cities and they work in capital cities. So when you take that number out, you've got an even smaller number. So this particular issue, which seems to have so much media, gets such traction in the media, we're really talking about small amounts of people. We're talking about a small amount of people within communities as well. As Anthony just mentioned, most people stay within their communities. They're really quite stable, even though we have increasing churn within communities. You can see I've just got some figures there of what's occurring in WA within the mining sector, and at least half the people there being long-distance commuting, but I'll go into that further. So there's different forms of mobility. Mobility is not new, it's been around, especially long-distance commuting, etc., has been around for a long time, but it's the scale and the growth of what's been occurring that's really attracted the attention, especially in the Bowen Basin and in Western Australia. It's just that rapid growth, and that's something which comes through in this presentation, is the biggest challenges for communities is not so much dealing with change and growth, it's the speed at which things can change that really impact on the communities and present all those particular challenges. There's just a little bit of data there on the inter-regional growth within the air traffic, etc., and that the resource regions have the highest levels of growth and an increased number in regional routes for fly-in, fly-out. One of the biggest drivers of mobility is the frequency and efficiency of transport. It's a great facilitator of mobility. So it's now a lot easier to do those longer drives. It's now a lot easier to do that particular flying. If you think back historically, people would jump on a ship and come from Europe all the way to Australia. It's very hard to do that on a regular basis using that form of transport. Mining is driving a lot of the aviation change, and its growth is expected to be extremely large. But when we're talking about growth across Australia, it's very much that notion of the patchwork economy. And we can just see this is a slide which I've borrowed from Dean Carson's, very kind of him to lend it to me. And it's just showing the difference in growth in these particular areas. And you see the Pilbara with its incredible growth there, and there's just that variation across regional Australia. Most of that growth is coming through in the mining sectors, you can see down the bottom there, and construction. There is some growth in other areas, but it's really dwarfed by the mining growth. Most of that growth is also coming in WA. And you can see here that the percentage of mining long-distance commuters within Australia. And you see that area in the Pilbara there with that incredible concentration. You can also see in the far side the Bowen Basin region there, which has some growth. The place of residence here, and you see a very large concentration of people within Perth who are flying in and out up to the Pilbara. But you see greater dispersion within Queensland. It's not that same concentrated form of FIFO or mobility. There's a different version, different characteristics to what is occurring in Queensland to what's occurring in WA. This is the percentage who reside in the capital city, and again, it just reinforces that same idea that what's occurring in Western Australia is really quite different to what's occurring in Queensland. And this is very relevant to the research that we're doing as we're collaborating with people in WA and trying to get these sort of common themes happening. So within Queensland, what we are seeing is quite a strong increase in the intra-regional movements, which has not really been captured in a lot of the data. And that's one of the challenges of looking at mobile workforces, is to get really good data on this particular phenomenon. What we're seeing is this increased road traffic between mining and dormitory townships, but it's not only the mining company employees that are creating this additional traffic. A lot of that additional traffic is coming out of mining services. I think mining services is often overlooked, especially when new developments are coming in and we start to look at these new developments, we look at workforce numbers coming into particular regions. We're often underestimating the additional flow on traffic, the additional impacts that are going to occur from others who are working associated with that particular development. So in one of the work camps that I went into to do a survey, it was actually in Middlemount, there was 40 different companies were represented within that particular work camp. It was showing the dispersion of activities across various different companies. So we see this shift from what used to be a scenario of single company organisations to these consortias, private contractors, government entities and communities within these particular communities. So just quickly to run through some of the rationales for mobile workforces, and I've just simply broken this down to industry, workers, communities, etc. For industry, there's a compelling case primarily around the pace at which they want their developments to move forward. They're in a rush to use those particular investment funds to put their operations together and extract some profit out of them. In that particular rush, there's limited time to build houses. That's a very lengthy process. It takes several years to build the accommodation, etc. So there's great difficulty also in providing housing and developing housing within those short time frames for other reasons apart from just the initial development. There's difficulty in providing services and social infrastructure in short time frames. So there's that need to bring in the workforce quite rapidly. Mobile workforces are seen as a very good solution to that particular problem. But what was occurring earlier on in the mining booms within Bowen Basin was that you had some sort of capacity within those communities to house people, to put together these particular developments. But over time, that capacity has diminished. So the advantages for industry are really around they can attract better skilled workers, there's less absenteeism, greater efficiency in high density accommodation, greater control over the workforce, less union interference is something we've seen. There's some environmental advantages put forward. Aboriginal approvals may be easier to get. FIFO is more risk adverse with investments, especially in boom bust cycles, etc. And one thing that was quite clear coming out of the Bowen Basin just recently with the announcement of a mine closure was that it sends back through the development industries that same sense of the boom bust cycles, that same reluctance to invest in mining communities because you never know when these mines are going to close or when the operations going to be altered significantly. There's a whole list of negative impacts for regions which are in the literature. There's the flyover effect, which was mentioned just before. There's the incomes being repatriated through to urban environments. There's non-residential populations not being counted, making it more difficult to get funding. There's the transient populations which make planning extremely difficult, and you see that in the schools particularly, especially in high schools, where at the beginning of the year they're never too sure how many kids are coming, and they suddenly get this influx of kids coming in with a particular project. It makes it extremely difficult, and then you have the difficulty of trying to get resources to teach those particular kids, etc. So lack of community support from FIFOs, income disparity within those communities, us and them scenarios, negative social impacts and family relationships gets brought up, and I'll go into that in a little more detail in a moment. So communities come out with a number of very different concerns. They're worried about the community image, that mobile workforces are going to have this sort of negative impact on that particular community. The impacts on families and workers comes out all the time. The lack of economic benefits coming from work camp residents is a big concern. And there's an association with work camps, mobile workforces, with a number of social ills. Just simply called the social ills of mining come out, and it's a long list which gets repeated over and over again. There's often very little evidence to support those assertions, though, and that's one of the challenges for researchers. There's also the worry about an increased dependency the communities have on these large-scale developments that come in and on mining companies. So just looking at this very quickly, in a recent survey, it indicated that 85% of people thought the mining boom was very good for Australia. But as you drill down, you see that only 12% consider that they benefited a lot themselves. So there's this, one of the challenges for researchers is there's a very strong individual element to these types of assessments. So the personal benefit of mining and its relevance to individuals becomes very important in these particular responses. And I think that's one of the challenges with CSG and coal mining at the moment is that it's predominantly an export industry. So those benefits from those particular activities seem to be flowing elsewhere. They seem to have less impact on particular individuals, and that makes it more challenging to develop support for those activities. I think in the past, when we had coal mining, the coal was going into our power stations, delivering power to us. In these scenarios, the more recent scenarios, it's going elsewhere, so it's being seen somewhere else. And this comes out a little bit in the bottom figures there, which I've got, which from Carrington, which showed that 61% of the respondents to this particular, it was an online survey, and it was people were recruited to that online survey through a number of organisations which are not in favour of mining and FIFO within their communities. But still 61% of the respondents supported new mining as long as there was a very small level of FIFO. And so 82% opposed the mining if it was 75% or more of FIFO. 3 minutes, I've got to really rush. So the advantages of LVC for mining workers, and this is one of the things which the messages I'd really like to put over is that we spend a lot of time with this sort of high-level debate around whether we should have FIFO, whether we shouldn't have FIFO. We don't have a lot of debate around what do the people involved in FIFO think, what do people in FIFO look to communities for, how can communities benefit more from FIFO, from these sorts of arrangements. So the advantages of long-distance commuting for mining workers is they get higher incomes, there's greater opportunity in their careers, there's greater employment opportunities for their partners. And we even saw in the data coming out of WA, we saw a number of scenarios whereby people were being recruited regionally in the Pilbara. They were becoming more successful, they were partnering up, they were moving up in their company, then they were relocating to Perth because the opportunities there for the couple was far better. And so there's a number of disadvantages. I think travel fatigue is a really important one here as well, and the dislocation from communities. Also that idea of being trapped in by big money, by having very large mortgages. So part of the debate that we're currently having, I would suggest, prioritises communities in a particular way over urban environments. What we are seeing is a growth in FIFO. We're seeing the FIFO is basically a mechanism which is increasing mine workers within urban environments. We are a largely urbanised society, yet we still have this debate which presents rural communities as some way inherently different from these urban environments, and one in which all those people involved in these activities would prefer. And I would question whether everyone would prefer them, and I would also question whether communities are doing enough to understand who this other population is, this other. So we're privileging agriculture over mining as an economic activity within the regions, and I would question that as well. So we really have to question whether regional transitions are being embraced or are actually being denied. And in a lot of areas, there seems to be this denial, as we don't want this particular change because the people coming are different from us. They're an other group of people. They don't fit in with our community. And why should our community be going out and trying to attract these people? And even those people who do not want to move to our particular community, why should we be doing something for them? So I see this sort of adversarial argument occurring, which I don't think is the most productive way to go through this. And I'll very quickly, because I don't think I have very much time left, so I'll very quickly go through this. I've got quite a lot of data here on people living within work camps, and I was running through the various different moves, and the main reason why people wouldn't live locally would be that the housing is too expensive. But once you take out that particular factor, it comes down to the family doesn't want to move. Those particular sort of closer relationships come in as being more important, which is slightly different to what Anthony was saying. And just very quickly, I'd like to get onto the more controversial aspect, which is around the often repeated statement that fly-in, fly-out mobile workforces adds to family stress and to relationship stress. And I was using that particular assertion in one of my presentations, and I was trying to find some good references to support that. I was trying to find good data to show that that is the case. And I found that very, very difficult. In fact, I couldn't find any. So what I did is I went to the ABS. I got some data from the ABS for 1996, 2001, 2006. Divorced and separated peoples, looked at it by industry of employment and looked at that by local government areas and tried to see that particular trend. And the hypothesis was quite simple. It was that there should be this increase in divorce and separation within those sectors because there's been an increase in FIFO, etc., an increase in these particular arrangements. And I couldn't find that in the data. In fact, when we looked at it for the Queensland state, we can see second from this end is mining. The largest proportion of divorced or separated people, unfortunately, is within the cultural and recreational services or the health and community services. Yet we don't see that as part of the public debate at all. We just see this other assertion which keeps coming out. And when I put this particular paper together, the rationale behind it was to put it out there and to say to researchers, come back and show me the evidence that this is wrong. And I'll gladly go along with it if it's good research. So we drilled down a little bit further with that, and we thought, okay, if we look at the different local government areas, basically, we're looking at a too large a scale. Queensland is too broad. So we break that down to the local government areas, and we can look at those locations whereby there was a large increase in mining workers within those particular areas. And then we can look at the change over that period of time. And our basic hypothesis was that those areas with large numbers of mining, etc., would have a corresponding increase in divorce and separation. And this appeared to be the case with Rockhampton, Thurrungowa, on the Gold Coast and in Gladstone, but it wasn't supported in Mackay or Brisbane or in Isaacs. In fact, it went down in Isaacs. So the data wasn't supporting that particular assertion as well. So I'd just like to leave you with those thoughts. And basically make the point that we do need further research into a number of the assertions that we're making about what is actually occurring. And there's quite a lot of research out there which is asking for community opinions about these types of things. What is your opinion of mining, etc., etc., without looking at drilling down, finding the data that is supporting those particular assertions that we are making. And just as a conclusion on data, shift length is a very important determinant of the incentives for FIFO, DIDO. Workforce location patterns appear to be path dependent to some extent, and that is if someone is first employed, with accommodation in a particular location, they tend to stick with that for a fair length of time. There doesn't seem to be a lot of change with that. The life cycle hypothesis is really quite an interesting area to explore as well. And getting back to that image of the bull and the little fella, the naked fella, a lot of the research which has looked at relationship stress and mobile workforces points out that most people going into those particular areas and that those arrangements, working arrangements, are quite aware of the particular trade-offs they're going into. They're quite capable of making these decisions. And instead of looking at the little guy as being small and in some way vulnerable, I think we should be looking at people who are working out in the regions as being quite capable of making these sort of trade-off decisions. And we should be incorporating some of that into our future planning. So I think that workforce mobility is going to be an increasing thing, and we should be trying to factor that into the way in which we make our communities more sustainable. And I added my own question, sorry. Thank you.
Lindsay's obviously got a lot to say there, and so in the interest of time, we'll just take one quick question, and then I'd definitely encourage you to bail him up over afternoon tea this afternoon and fire some more questions at him. Did we have one quick one from the audience? One down there? No?
I seem to have a conclusively proved that mine is significantly more than what's underground. I see in my own the social fabric as well. So have you got any evidence of what you've seen that there are communities who are successfully working at this transition process that you touched on a few times, that transition of the flying buyouts into being permanently located within the region that they're working in?
I think there's examples of some initiatives which are positive, but I don't think there's a really good example of a complete community that's engaging in this. I think what's occurring out in Claremont at the moment is quite an interesting transition. With the closure of the Blair Athol mine, which was almost 100% local workforce, and now they've opened up the Claremont mine, which is now possibly around 50%. There's been some good initiatives there to try and balance that particular arrangement, but there's still challenges that I see.
Okay, we might have to wrap it up there just in the interest of time, but thank you very much, Lindsay, and I definitely encourage you to bail him up this afternoon over afternoon tea.